It's that time. Lock and load. The Michael Berry Show is on the air.
Republicans in general have been stereotyped into this sexist, homophobic, racist, all the things that they, you know, throw at Trump every single day, and it's just not true. When you actually follow the context of what Trump's actually said in the past, none of it's true. He's said since the 90s, I don't care what your sexual orientation is, if you do a good job and work hard, I want you working for me. I want you to prosper because you're going to prosper me, and that's what he's doing in the country as well. He doesn't care that I am married to a man. He doesn't care. When you go back and look at other people's comments in the past, they seem to have been pretty opposed to it. Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama all were opposing gay marriage until 2013. So, you know, it's pretty hypocritical for them to try to point a finger at Trump when they're the ones on public record being in Congress saying these things.
Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
So many people cutting loose the chains of bondage that have kept them on the Democrat plantation. Gays, blacks, Hispanics, immigrants, women, college students, labor, good policy. That's what people want. Seth Weathers is our guest. We're going to talk big tech, but first, he's the former Trump Georgia State Director. And there is a last-minute push, Seth, by Joe Biden to take Georgia, a concept I wouldn't have believed possible 10 years ago. Should I take that laugh as a good sign?
That is a great sign, and you should not take it possible because it's not. The Washington Post has a story today about it, you know, saying, is, you know, Biden has Georgia in his sights. I don't think Biden has anything in his sights, much less Georgia, and I would say that Trump will win Georgia by 3+ points on Election Day. I'm very confident on that. Take it to the bank.
The Stacey Abrams candidacy kind of came out of nowhere. Of course, she refused to concede. Was that really right? That close? And if so, why?
No, I mean, there was nothing about, there was a higher black turnout that election when the whole point was she claimed election suppression. There was a higher black turnout in Georgia history the year she lost. There was not much basis to the nonsense from her. But if you know Stacey, she writes novels for a living, and sometimes I think the political life she lives is just the continuation of one of her novels. It's all fiction.
So you don't think there's a chance that Biden wins Georgia? When you look at the issues there, obviously guns are a big, big issue, and the gun control argument has, I think, hurt Biden with voters that maybe he would have done better with. White working class, white labor, mm-hmm. Southern labor. I think gun control and the violence have really hurt him. But what's going on there? I mean, we had the situation in Atlanta where you had the district attorney trying to bring charges because he was up for a reelection and his 17-year assistant defeated him, and it was kind of one of those knife-on things. But I'll let you talk. What's going on in Atlanta and in Georgia as a whole?
Correct. What you're referring to there is after the incident where they ended up burned down a Wendy's simply because an officer was defending himself against a known criminal, and which resulted in that shooting. And what is amazing is that the DA in that district, which is Fulton County, which is where Atlanta resides, is a Democrat and even lost resoundingly to another Democrat in the primary this year. That's how much of an upset it was and how much people are really tired of the nonsense. And you look at places, and yes, you mentioned the gun factor is obviously a factor here in Georgia. And if you look at early voting, the numbers that have been released here in Georgia and counties that are hard right, hard Republican counties, we are through the roof. We've got some counties that are in the 90% of the entire 2016 vote. They're already at 90% of what that number was already in early voting this year. We're Election Day voters for the most part here in Georgia. Now, this year things changed a little bit due to the pandemic, but we will have a strong Election Day turnout. And so you're seeing counties that are, you know, that went 70-30 for Trump last time are literally at 96% turnout rate, which is just unheard of, incredible. So I think, and that's the more rural areas, and you know, you get outside the city. And my, I think that
my suspicion is that Georgia is much like New York and Portland, in that you've got the big city of Portland, the big city of New York, and then you've got the rest of the state, which may not even make up half of it, but you've got these big urban areas, and then the rest of it is rural, and just hoping they all come in.
Correct. And we're seeing incredible turnout from those people that are even north of the, you know, the metropolitan area. We're seeing incredible turnout to make up for that. And so, you know, you can still win in Georgia statewide with the north and south vote outside of the outside of Atlanta. And that will prove to be true again this year.
How has your governor done with the handling of COVID? Because he was one of the ones who pretty early on wanted to reopen the state, and the New York yes. Times and Washington Post were going after him. How would you rate the job he's done now?
100 out of 100. I mean, he's absolutely been great on it, as Governor Brian Kemp here in Georgia. And yes, he took an incredible amount of abuse when he was pushing for the reopening of schools and for, you know, getting our businesses open and, you know, not going full shutdown like some of the liberal cities have done. And he's taken incredible abuse, but you look at the results here in Georgia, and we've been on the decline. So he's done an incredible job and should be commended, and especially considering the amount of just horrific heat. I mean, they were literally calling the guy a mass murderer mm-hmm. when he pushed for some of the reopening. It's unbelievable.
Well, it's interesting that DeSantis in Florida, I think, yep. probably received the brunt of that. And now mm-hmm. he is being hailed as a hero because he stood strong in the face of the attacks, and he's no Andrew Cuomo. They made Cuomo out to be the hero, and he was a bad guy. And I think that has flipped now. And people are saying, many Texans are saying, I wish we had DeSantis as our governor because our governor won't open things
up. No kidding. Yeah, you guys have had a unique spin on it there with your Republican governor. That took me by a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, I will leave that alone, lest the invective violate FCC rules. Let's just say that this Republican governor is not very popular right now.
That's what I'm hearing.
He is not very popular at all. And it's, you know, it's one of these classic cases of John McCain went to Washington, D.C. and started campaigning mm-hmm. to D.C. and forgot the people of Arizona. Greg Abbott set his sights on the presidency and just sort of overlooked the people of Texas. And what's interesting is we've had a number of his former key supporters, his big donors, precinct chairman, Senate district chairman, who have banded together and written letters and said, look, we can't support you again. We're not for business groups, you know, longtime supporters, people that had always been with him who were saying, we can't be for this anymore. You're destroying the state. And I think he's made a huge mistake, but he's painted himself into a corner.
You're true, but you have a great lieutenant governor that I think is rising to the occasion. And I can see him. I see him as your future governor, would be my guess.
Well, and Alan West is now our state party chairman.
Right.
So there is some real talented leadership here. Unfortunately, Greg Abbott is not among it. But I want to talk to you about big tech, and I want to talk to you about censorship of big tech by individuals. You see it in the Biden campaign, or what you know, prohibiting coverage of the Biden campaign. And I want to do that coming up in just a moment. Seth Weathers is our guest.
Michael Berry Show.
Quick reminder, if you'll go to michaelberryshow.com, that's our official website, and while you're there, buy your official Michael Berry Show gear and wear it proudly. We appreciate you. That's all at michaelberryshow.com. Fact to make you feel old. Simon Le Bon turns 62 years old today. Longtime lead singer of Frankie Goes to Hollywood, born near Bushey, Herefordshire, in England. Joined the band in 1980 as a replacement for Stephen Duffy, turning up for his audition in a pair of pink leopard print pants. You a fan of Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Ramon? Seth Weathers is our guest. Seth, why should people, first let me say, I think living in the bubble you and I live in, where we're engaging in political commentary all day long for entertainment, as a consultant,
right,
as a guest, this sort of thing, I think we have a tendency to believe that everyone lives in this echo chamber bubble, but they don't. Most people are not on any social media, and the young people are on Snapchat and Instagram, and the older people are on Facebook. But Twitter is an important platform. Why?
Well, it's a way that it's, for one thing, the media is on Twitter. Every member of the media is on Twitter. And so it's a way of disseminating communications from, say, campaigns or political beliefs, whatever it may be. And when you have literally Twitter is now censoring as a the President Trump's tweets. So they control the narrative. When you have social media controlled by big tech, and then you have the corporate gods that are control our mainstream media, when you control that, you can control the narrative. There's people that have no idea what's really going on with, you know, say the Hunter Biden email or many other things because of the prism that they see everything through. And when you shut down the ability for people to communicate our message, the conservative message, you shut down freedom of speech, in my opinion, because it is the public. Social media is the public square. And so it's like saying, hey, sorry, you can't talk on this corner about that subject. Move along. Or or taking you to jail as in a Twitter jail.
Well, and we've seen that with the Hunter Biden story, possibly the biggest political mm-hmm. scandal in decades, and the story hits at exactly the moment where it could have maximum impact on the election, and it is verifiable, at least within
right.
traditional journalistic ethics, and Twitter deciding, no, New York Post, you can't break that story, and nobody can link to it. That's a very, very troubling turn of events, isn't it?
It is, and as someone who's experienced some big tech censorship myself, I realize the effect it can have on people and businesses.
Talk
businesses
about that, because I know Bring Ammo was censored by Apple.
Yes, Bring Ammo is a company that I run. We sell a lot of very conservative. We are saying is we're aggressively patriotic and pro-Second Amendment. So you can kind of get our politics from that. And on our website with bringammo.com, we had this called Apple Chat, which means you go to the website, you have a question for us, you can pop on there, ask your question, and it goes to one of our people, and they can respond to a potential customer. Well, Apple decided that our site contains inappropriate language or, quote, promotes violence or intolerance. Now, this came a matter of days after we had put a shirt on our site that had the couple in St. Louis that defended their own mansion there, as you probably recall. And we did kind of a parody shirt, you know, had a picture of them on there with Get Off My Lawn. There's nothing aggressive about it. It's not promoting violence. We're having fun with it. From that, the only thing we can conclude was what ultimately made them decide we were promoting violence. They shut us down. We reached out to them to try to get that undone, and they literally would not. The only response we had was decision's final. You are never allowed to use Apple Chat again. I mean, this is something that affects our business. You know, you just shut down without warning, and that's the way we were communicating with thousands of customers.
You know, it is so disturbing that there are folks sitting in a room with the capacity to do this,
mm-hmm.
and then you see that those individuals, the Kamala Harris to Twitter, or the Twitter to Kamala Harris move, that these individuals mm-hmm. have worked with Kamala Harris, Dianne Feinstein, and the like, and then they're moving in and out of big tech and these campaigns with such fluidity that it almost appears as if the Biden campaign is directing the censorship.
I would agree, and I think that based on, like you're referring to, the people that are moved, that have been head of Twitter communications is all of a sudden head of Kamala Harris communications, and it's some directly working for Biden himself that, like you said, they switch back and forth. And so they literally move into the roles at around election time. They ban a bunch of conservative accounts, and they ban the ability to now even, it's gotten to the point where, like you said, the New York Post can't even share a story they broke. This is, I believe it's America's oldest newspaper, started by Alexander Hamilton. They can't share a news story. That's dystopian. It's 1984. Would you have 5 years ago believe that would happen? Probably not.
No. And the worst part about it is the sense of futility. We complain, but we have to use their platform to complain.
Right.
You know, I guess the Senate is going to drag them down. I think it was originally supposed to be tomorrow. I don't know when that's going to be. But I don't think they have any real fear. I don't think they have any real fear of any of losing their Section 230 protections. And without that, I don't know. I don't know what can be done.
I agree. Now, if you look, I am not an expert in it with the law, but if you look at someone, I don't know if you follow a guy named Will Chamberlain, who is the editor and head of Human Events.
Sure.
He has a great story of article about this on humanevents.com regarding big tech censorship and how it can be combated, and goes into a lot of stuff about Section 230, et cetera. So I would encourage any of your listeners that are interested in big tech censorship to go to Human Events and search out that article. And I think you would find it fascinating.
Well,
and
he's a brilliant
guy,
people,
and an attorney.
Yeah, I think most people understand the basic concept of a platform versus a publisher. If you're a publisher, you get to choose which content you put on your page, and that's what most media outlets are. And a platform is like an exchange, and you don't control the content. And by being a platform, you're not responsible for the content. And that's why Twitter doesn't get sued every day for defamation by allowing someone to say something that might be libelous or defamatory about another person, because, or even slanderous, because they're not responsible for the content. They're simply a gathering place. But when you start exercising that editorial discretion, and that means censoring people or blocking people or limiting content, then you are a publisher and not a platform, and you lose that very powerful protection. And the first person to explain this to me was Ted Cruz, and he said it some time ago. And he said, without this protection, their business model would collapse. They would be dragged to court on a daily basis. They'd never live up to it.
Correct.
You know, the New York Times has every ability to control what gets on their page, and they can limit the comment section very easily. They can turn that off. But they know what they publish, and they have editorial control over those publishers. The protection for Facebook and Twitter was all designed around the fact that if you're going to allow the general public to speak, you have no control over the nutty things that they're going to say. Well, strip away that protection and let's see what they do. If they're going to act like publishers, then let's legally treat them like publishers. Give me your prediction on the election, Seth.
I think Trump wins this thing. I think if you look at Trafalgar polling, who Robert Clay, he was the most accurate pollster in 2016. I think he's showing that we're headed that direction again. I think he wins Pennsylvania. I think he wins Wisconsin. I think he has a real shot at Michigan. And, you know, states like Georgia are a lock. I think Florida is nearly a lock at this point as well. And all he has to do is get one of the Rust Belt states, and assuming he holds Florida, which he will, and he's reelected president. He could get Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, or Michigan if he holds, you know, the basic ones that we know he will hold. He's reelected. So
I'm worried about Michigan. I got to tell you though, what the former vice president said about the oil industry certainly didn't help him in Texas, where I am, and I think it'll cost him Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And what happened last night is not helping him.
Absolutely, what happened last night was a continued wake up call for voters, and I think we will see the result of last night on Election Day in Pennsylvania as well.
Yes, we will. I know it's Bring Ammo on Twitter. Is it bringammo.com?
It is bringammo.com, which, you know, we should have been a little more not so obvious with it. All the big tech people come after us very quickly with a name like that.
Yes, they do. But you know what? You get the point across. People know why they're coming to visit. Seth Weathers, come back and visit. You're a great guest. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. The pandemic shutdown and resulting isolation, causing more damage than the virus itself. An update, sadly, coming up.
The Michael Berry Show. Michael Berry Show.